Welcome, colleagues, back to the office. It's Steve. Welcome to episode 26 of the CPE Today podcast. Today's class is Excel's Best Features, Part 1. Today's class is going to be looking at all the different new features and functions of Excel that we can use to help improve productivity, efficiency, and effectiveness with this incredible application. Excel is one of those applications that is constantly changing, evolving, especially as we look into the Office 365 platform. There's so much new stuff that we should be aware of. They're always adding new features, new functions, new different things about the application, and just staying on top of it can be a full-time job in a lot of respects. For many of us, myself included, this is the basis of how we do our work on a given day. Most of our projects will take place in Excel. Most of our analysis will take place in Excel. And certainly a majority of our reporting will take place inside of Excel. And so understanding how to effectively use this application can really benefit the overall organization tremendously, because it will essentially allow us to be able to continue to use this application very clearly and effectively. So in today's podcast, we will be looking at the newer features. We're going to start off with a six-pack of new functions that have been added in recent releases of Excel. We'll be looking at, for example, the text join function. We'll be looking at max ifs. We'll be looking at ifs. We'll be looking at switch and others that can improve upon some of the existing functions that we have in Excel already. So understanding how these functions work could be really effective because they supersede existing functions inside of the Excel application. It's a more effective way of being able to, for example, write a logical formula using ifs compared to its traditional counterpart if. Likewise, max ifs or min ifs or average ifs allow us to do a lot more stuff than its traditional average or count or min or max could have provided. So we'll talk about what those are. Then we're going to go ahead and dive into some of the other newer features and functions that have been added as well. So we're going to go ahead and take a look at some of the new chart types that have been added to Excel, including the map charts and the funnel charts, as well as where and when you might want to use these particular charts for your analysis. We'll also talk just for a minute about Power BI. I'm not going to dive into Power BI in depth as we have a whole nother CPE Today podcast series dedicated to Power BI, but I do want to draw your attention to some of the newer functions with the integration between Excel and Power BI. What you could do with between these two tools is really cool. We'll also talk about some improvements in pivot tables. Pivot tables are one of my absolute favorite functions inside of Excel, and understanding where and how they function is really important. And one of the really cool things that you can do with Excel now is that you can use this tool and default a lot of your options with respect to where and how you would use and create your pivot tables. You can create those inside of inside of Excel and default those options for future pivot tables. So things like your layout, your preferred subtotal, or your grouping for time, you can handle all of that inside of Excel now, and you can set those as default options that will be there every single time you choose to do a pivot table. We'll finish with a discussion on some of the new data types that have been added to Excel, specifically the geography data type, as well as the financial data type or the stock data type that brings real-time integration of geolocation information and financial information right inside of Excel. So if you want to, for example, query and get the real-time price, relative real-time price of a financial security like the price of the Microsoft shares or Apple or Google, you can do that directly inside of Excel right now, which is pretty nifty. So all that and more in today's episode of CPE Today. I do want to remind you that if you are a financial professional, and I hope you are, you can earn credits for watching or listening to today's podcast. It's super simple. After listening or watching, head on over to cpetoday.com and use course code EXB1. Again, that is EXB1. And you'll take a short quiz and you will earn a credit for today's class. It's super simple and you can do it in about 2 minutes. Financial professionals of all types, CPAs, CFPs, EAs, you all need credits to maintain your license, and I do too. What a fast, efficient, and easy way to be able to stay on top of your education so that when it comes time to renew, you have enough credits and you are good to go. Again, visit cpetoday.com, use course code EXB1, and you can earn a credit for today's podcast. Alrighty, so today's podcast will 100% be done inside of Excel with the exception of our fantastic review questions. So one of the benefits of purchasing today's course is the fact that you can get access to the sample materials that we're going to go ahead and talk about today. So head on over again to cpetoday.com. You can purchase today's course and get access to those sample materials. All right, so let's go ahead and dive right in. And what I'm going to be focusing on again is kind of more on the newer features that have been added in the 2019 version forward of Excel. Now, if you buy Excel on what's called a perpetual license, meaning you buy it, you own it. Unfortunately, you don't get any of the newest, latest, and greatest stuff. Whatever Excel did in 2019, and really it's more like 2018, is what it will do going forward. When you buy the perpetual license, there aren't many updates that get added other than security improvements to the actual Excel or any of the Word or PowerPoint applications. What they are is what they are for the duration of the time that you're using them. However, if you are an Office 365 subscriber, and I hope you are, well, guess what? You get the latest and greatest, and Microsoft will be pushing out updates as frequently as once a month, depending on what update channel and update path that you are on. A question I usually get started with is, hey, Steve, how do I know what version of Excel I am operating on? Well, it's important to know if we're going to be talking about the latest and greatest stuff, you know, we need to know essentially what version of Excel that you are operating on. And it's very simple to do. From Excel, PowerPoint, Word, or any of those Office applications, come on over here to the File menu. From the File menu, you go ahead and drop down over here to our Account. And from Account, you're going to go ahead and you will see, for example, what version and what license and what update that you are on with respect to Office. So you can see here that I am on the Office 365 apps for Enterprise. So that tells us, for example, that we are on the E5 or E3 version of Office 365. So that tells us that we're going to have access to the Pro Plus version of Excel, which includes things like the Inquire toolbar, and some of the more advanced data modeling capabilities that come with the advanced version of Excel. So it tells us, hey, this is not a perpetual license. This is a subscription-based license, and that it is on the enterprise plan. And if we scroll down here, you'll also see down here about Excel, and you will see what version you are on and what update channel you are on. So right now, you can see that I am on version 2104, meaning this is the 2021 version, build 4 of Excel for my computer here. And you can also see that I am on the current channel, meaning I'm getting the latest updates. There are several different channels. There's the Insider channel, which is the bleeding edge of Microsoft's updates. Wouldn't recommend that you be on that just because there's a good chance that they'll push an update might break, especially if you're using a plugin or macro inside your application. If it's business critical, I would not recommend the bleeding edge of Excel. But I would recommend anything from the current or the semi-annual channel, which are going to push up updates much more regularly, but they will be much more stable than what you would get in like the monthly channel. Additionally, if you pop up here, you'll say, hey, there are some updates that are available. So when I'm done with this presentation here, I'm going to go ahead and run those updates. Microsoft will automatically update Excel for me, and I will get the latest and greatest in that update channel. And in that update channel, that is where we're going to get many of the features and functions that we'll talk about in this podcast, as well as in future podcasts for those updates. They're going to come through that update path from Microsoft. Unfortunately, if you are on that perpetual license, meaning you bought it and you own it, and you're not paying Microsoft annually for or monthly for Office 365, whenever you got that application, it will do what it does. And unfortunately, there will not be any feature improvements that come. However, there will be security improvements that will pop in for you. Okay, so in our first example here, we're going to be looking at 6 new functions. We're going to take a look at text join, concat, ifs, switch, max ifs, and min ifs. We're not going to look at every single one of these because some of these are pretty derivative to each other, but I'm going to focus on the ones that I think are of most value. Now, these features were implemented in version 1601. So as long as you're running version 1601 forward, you should see these 6 functions pop up for you. Now, the first one we're going to look at is text join. Text join is a fabulous way about that you can concatenate or list a range of values together, including a delimiting character, you know, such as a space or comma, and either include or exclude blank spaces between, but you can bring those cells together and create a new value. Let me show you what I mean in terms of the existing way that we would normally handle concatenation. Now, if you've never heard of the concatenation, what that word means is it means to take disparate items and to join them together so that they form a new item. For example, here we've got our address 1, address 2, city, state, and zip. So let's say, for example, I wanted to create a new value that put all of these together. Maybe it's for a mailing label or something like that. Totally simple. We would just do this in the traditional way of handling Excel with the ampersand or with the concatenate, the full value, the full word function. But most folks, when they want to add things together, they will use that concatenation. And so we can go ahead and use an ampersand here, and we can put all these different items together like this, and we end up with a full list of those five things: our address 1, 2, city, state, and zip. Now, does anybody see something wrong with this? Well, as you should see, is that they are all mashed together, but there's no separation. There's no delimiter. Typically, if we were, for example, to see a full address, we would expect something like a comma and a space to appear inside of that value. Well, under traditional concatenation procedures, what we would literally have to do is to manually put those values in here. So if I wanted to put a space between something, I would literally have to manually type those in, just like you see here with another concatenation, another ampersand, a double quote, comma, and another ampersand to essentially join those different items together. And so that is how we would, for example, do something like this, where we would manually add in that space and that comma. Now, everything works great until you get into an optional field like this with address 2. Notice with address 2, we end up with a double comma there. Now, how would we traditionally handle this? Well, the way that we would traditionally handle this would be through something like a if statement, where we would test to see if address 2 is empty, and if so, exclude that comma. Well, that's fine if you're doing two values or three values, but it starts to get pretty hairy if you start having five or six additional fields that you're looking to add together. And so this isn't a very good way of doing it. Does it work? Absolutely. Should you do it? Yeah, if it's one or two, but there's a much better way of handling this. And this is with the text join function. Now, the text join function takes three arguments: what you want to delimitate with, what to do if a cell is blank, and then what values you want to add together. So we're going to go ahead and start this off with an equal sign. We're going to say text join. Okay, and the first thing is our delimiter here. Now, for this particular scenario where we've got address information, I want to use a comma and a space, just like before. Now, anytime we're dealing with text inside of a formula, I want you to hard code this to your brain. Anytime that we're dealing with text here, we always will use a double quote. Double quote inside of Excel means, hey, Excel, don't treat this like a formula. Instead, treat it like text. So make sure that you always use Excel with double quotes inside of it versus SQL versus other operations where you would use a single quote. So we're going to say double quote, comma, space, double quote like this. And so every time it sees this value here, it's going to go ahead and add a comma and a space. The next thing is going to be what to do with empty cells. So in this instance, I want it to ignore those empty cells so that in row 3 here, where we have an empty address 2, we don't end up with that double comma business that we saw before. So we're going to go ahead and say, do not include empty cells. Now, the third parameter here is going to be what values we want to be included. Now, I can do this discrete like this, where essentially I can say A2, B2, C2, so on and so forth. So if you've got things spreading across a multiple separate sections of your worksheet, well, you can go ahead and point it at an array and it'll go ahead and you can pull just those cells, or you can point it at a range, in this case, A2 to E2 like this. And sure enough, there we end up with a very clean address. So that is what that text join function looks like. And if we come on over here, here's an example. If you look at the second worksheet here, this is with that same formula, but using false here, works exactly the same, except it includes any blank cells that might pop up. So easy peasy. This is a much better way of being able to join text together without having to create a whole bunch of messy logic with respect to joining these cells together. Now, the third one that I wanted to show you is concat, okay? Now, concat is the exact same as the ampersand, and it's the exact same as concatenate. Previously, inside of Excel, your only two options with respect to concatenation were either to use the full function equals concatenate or the ampersand sign. Microsoft decided to make that a little bit shorter, and now you can just use concat. However, I don't know when you would ever want to use this, considering the ampersand is so much easier than either using the concatenate or the concat formula. Now, I want to point out, one of the nice things about the concatenate is that you can use it anywhere inside of Excel. You know, as an example here, let's go ahead and zoom in and just show you one more example. Let's say, for example, you wanted to... append something to a formula. So let's just do something simple here. Equals 2 plus 2. Well, sure enough, we should say 4. Well, let's say I wanted to append this formula and maybe add something like 4 CPE credits and add the word credits at the end. Well, we can totally do that with the ampersand double quotes, and we'll type in credits like this, and it will continue to do the math operations as expected. And this concatenation at the end appends it. We can also prepend data using the same method as well. So we can go ahead and say, let's just say learning like this. We'll go ahead and do another ampersand like that. And that's how we can come up with that credits. However, we need to ensure that if we're going to do this, we include any spaces inside of that concatenation. But Excel will treat the text before or after in whatever way that we would like. And that's really kind of a nice thing to be able to do this with, because it gives us the ability to really kind of be able to join the data and append the data or prepend the data and get it to really kind of work the way that we want. And so I use this technique often with headers and footers and in summary data inside of my Excel analysis when I'm doing something and I want to provide context, like in this case, number of credits or number of units, and I still want the math to be done. Well, that concatenation sure can make things a lot simpler for you. So that text join function, in my opinion, especially when you're trying to join a large range of cells together, that's probably the overall best way of handling it. Let's go ahead and look at our next new function, which is ifs. Okay, so ifs, what is ifs? Ifs is a better way of writing a logical formula. A logical formula is an if statement. Now, if has been around probably since Excel started, and it's a very simple formula that can add tremendous value to your analysis. If allows us to be able to conditionally do things if a particular criteria is met, okay? In a traditional if formula, we have three operators, okay? So we have our logical test, which will typically be some sort of arithmetic operation or Boolean test where if inventory equals 500, do this. If inventory falls below 500, do this, so on and so forth. Let's just go ahead and write a simple example here. So we're going to say inventory level, okay, and we're going to go ahead and say it is 500. So let's go ahead and write an if statement traditionally where we would evaluate that 500 and see if we can come up with something pretty cool with it. And let's go ahead and see if we can return back a value. So we're going to go ahead and say equals if cell D11 equals 500. Actually, let's say if it is greater than or equal to 500, return back the message. Oops. Return back the message inventory level. Okay. Okay, and if not, return back too low, reorder. Like this. Okay, oops, and what are we doing there? Oh, we're missing a double quote. There we go. There we go. So inventory level is 500. That works. If we go ahead and put it to 499, we'll say too low, reorder. And it looks like we got an extra. Oh, right here, we got an extra thing in that. Let's see, why is that? Sometimes when you do this on the fly, it gets a little upset with you. Why don't you like that? No, I just want you to do, let's just do it like that. There we go. Too low, reorder. Okay, so if this was 500, fine, okay. 501, okay, so on and so forth. Well, what happens if we need to test maybe not just one level of conditions, but a second level of conditions or a third level of conditions? Well, the traditional if statement's limits are quite strict. What we would end up doing here is writing what we would call a nested if statement, where in the false section of the if statement, we would go ahead and write a second or third or fourth or fifth. We can actually have up to 64 levels of nested if, where these formulas would essentially repeat into each other until it finds a true statement. But what ended up happening with this is that for this particular formula, you would end up with just a very, very, very convoluted, difficult formula to be able to operate with and being able to use. The reason being is that you would end up with all these levels of if inside of it, and it would become very slow, and debugging this, troubleshooting this would become quite difficult in terms of being able to work, because you'd end up with, if you went into your function argument explorer here, just so many levels that, you know, finding the correct thing sometimes could be very difficult. And in fact, it often was. So ifs, on the other hand, is kind of a new way that we can write a formula for a logical expression. And what's awesome about this is that it doesn't take away from if in the slightest. So if we still want to use if, we absolutely can. If we want to use the same functionality in ifs, like an if statement, we totally can as well. Let me show you what I mean by this. So I've got a very simple example here, and I'm almost treating this ifs like a lookup formula, okay? And so what we're doing here is that we're evaluating where the formula is, in this case, where the city is, and if it matches a criteria, go ahead and return back that particular value. So as an example here, let's go ahead and clear this out, just to make this, and we'll write this on its own. So clear contents, and let's just go ahead and write this one again. Okay. And what we want to do here is we want to look up the city name and then return back the appropriate zip code for that particular city. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and say, let's call this one up here zip code. And we're going to go ahead and say ifs. And then we're going to go ahead and start testing something. Now, the big difference between ifs and if is that ifs only test to see if something's true. You just write a whole bunch of true statements inside of this. So we're going to say ifs B2 equals Atlanta. Okay. Return back 30303, which is the zip code for Metro Atlanta area. And in fact, it does. It returns back 30303. If we go to the next row here, you'll see it returns pound NA. Now, what ifs does is it evaluates a list of parameters here, and then it just tries to find a true value or the first true value it finds. If there's several true values in there, it just returns back the first one. But we don't write a not statement. We don't write a not true statement, a false statement. If it doesn't match, it basically returns back NA. Where else do we see NA? Well, we typically see NA in what? A lookup formula. And that's kind of what ifs is. It's a lookup formula, but for a logical expression. So we can evaluate something, and if it comes back true, return back some sort of value. Now, we can wrap this in a is NA or an if NA or an if error in the event that we get a false statement so that we can do something different with it. And I'll show you that here in a moment. Now, in this first example, what we're looking at is just a single test, if it's equal to Atlanta 30303. Let's go ahead and try this again, and let's throw in a second one. What we're doing here is we're writing these in what we would call key value pair. So the first one would be the first thing, the key, and then the second would be the value. And so we're going to test if B2 equals, in this case, Bakersfield. Okay, and if it's Bakersfield, return back, I don't know what their zip is, but let's just say it's 90210. Okay, so you'll notice that even though we have that second value in here, it's still returning Atlanta. Why? Because Atlanta is the first expression, that, and it stops there. It's true. If we copy this down to the next one, we see that 90210 is added. And again, if we go to that third, the fourth, and the fifth, because those additional values aren't listed. So most of the time, we're just wanting to check to see if something's true or not, and if so, do something conditionally. And that's where ifs, in my opinion, really shines. And so it's a great way of writing a logical formula without having to create a whole bunch of additional work and without having to create a whole bunch of additional nested if statements to support it. Now, one of the things you could do is you could wrap this in an if error formula. which is a wonderful formula that you can choose to use in the event that you have an heir do something differently. So that pound NA that we see here as an example, that's an example of an heir. And so what we could do with the if heir is that if an heir occurs, do something differently. So as an example, instead of having that nasty pound NA, let's just copy this down one more just so we can keep that heir message there. Okay, we could do something differently. Now, if heir is a wrapping formula, it goes in front of whatever formula you do, and it's a great catch-all. So, you know, if the formula doesn't work, do something different. If the formula does work, display whatever that value should have been. So, as long as it doesn't heir, you'll never see the if heir formula value. But if it does heir, it gives you the opportunity to do something different. So, I could write in, for example, a not in list value. Oops, one extra parentheses there. Okay. And instead of getting that pound NA, we get that not in list. And I hope you can see it. That, in my opinion, looks a lot cleaner. Now, we could choose to do something different. We could instead of saying not in list, we could just go ahead and do two double quotes like that, and it would display nothing at all. So that is your ifs statement, and ifs is a wonderful way of being able to write a very comprehensive logical formula without having to do a whole bunch of nested if statements inside of it. And you can use it really kind of anywhere inside of Excel where you would normally write your if statement. You can just go ahead and write that ifs and avoid that additional work of those nested functions. All right, let's go ahead and take a look at our next example, which are going to be logical. Let's go ahead and here, logical conditional arithmetic. Okay, so what I mean by this is logical conditional arithmetic. So we can essentially evaluate something based off of a condition, and if the condition is true, do something. Now, there are several of these. There's min ifs, which will find the minimum value. There's max ifs, which will find the maximum value. Sum ifs, count ifs, average ifs, so on and so forth. Now, the actual sum if, count if, average if, max ifs, those have been around for a long time, but they were singular. So if I wanted to do, let's say, max if like this, I could only evaluate one specific criteria for it. Okay, so I couldn't, for example, want to go and look at two or three of a particular thing. I would have to do them manually if I wanted to do that, or maybe use a pivot table to go find that particular value. But now, let's say you've got a list of your sales data. So on the left-hand side here, we have a listing of our salespeople and the different transactions. And let's say I wanted to go and find the largest transaction for a given person or the smallest transaction for a given person. Well, that's where this max if or min ifs can come in play. Now, the formulas themselves are pretty simple to write. Okay, they take a minimum of two criteria, but you can have a third, a fourth, a fifth. And some of them, like for example, some ifs might take a minimum of three criteria. And it might be what you're looking up, what you'd like to match it against, and then also where the math should occur. With min ifs and max ifs, one does the biggest, one does the smallest. They only take a minimum of two, where the math should occur, and then also what to evaluate against. So let's just see if we wanted to do a simple one-off thing. I wanted to find the largest sale that occurred for the salesperson, Jackson. Well, the first thing is going to be our max range. And I'm going to just point it at the column C here. Now, being a little lazy, best practices tell us don't ever sum across a whole column like this. Best case scenario, you turn your data into a table and then you specify the column. But for the purposes of what we're doing here, just summing the whole column isn't a big deal. So we're going to go ahead and say column C here. And then we're going to go ahead and point it at range criteria one, which would in this case be the value in cell two. And if we go ahead and just put a closing parenthesis on this, this does take three criteria. We're going to go ahead and point it at column A here. Okay. And that will go ahead and find the maximum value for Jackson. So what we have here is we're doing our math operations here in column C, where our transaction amount is listed. We are looking up to match our criteria against column A. And the criteria that we're going to match about, the value of that is going to be located in F2. Okay, so in this case, it comes to 3 $1,992.61. Now, this is looking across all months, January, February, March, so on and so forth. Now, often, you know, finding something for a given 12-month period is nice, but it would be a heck of a lot nicer if I could not only see it for a given person, but in a more specific manner. In this case, maybe a given time period as well. Well, in this particular case, we're going to go ahead and add a second criteria here. And so that second criteria would be, hey, go look at Jackson, but then also go look at the specific month, December, January, so on and so forth. Now, for this, we just need to add a second criteria range and then a second criteria to evaluate against. So in this case, we're going to say column B here, and we're going to go ahead and say F3 should be the second range criteria to evaluate. So in this case, we see for the salesperson Jackson in the month of December, that person's largest sale was $3,819. If we change it maybe to Harris here, we'll see that a different sale amount occurs. Likewise, if we change it to Smith, or if we want to come over here to December and change it to July, well, guess what? Now we've got something that's incredibly specific and we can find the exact value that we're looking for. So if we're trying to find, for example, find some KPIs and metrics that we want to evaluate against, we can very easily and quickly do that by just writing the additional conditions that we choose to evaluate. Alrighty, let's go ahead and have our first review question for the day. Which function would you use to find the largest or smallest value? Let's go ahead and go with the smallest here. Which function would you use to find the smallest value for a given condition in a set of values? Okay. So if we wanted to find the smallest value, what would we look at? Would it be text join? The answer to that is no. Would it be ifs? You could. I could tell you, you could definitely do it. I could think of a few ways of handling that, but it would be a very inefficient. So I'm going to go ahead and say that's not the correct answer. If we're trying to find the smallest values, max is certainly not going to get us that. It gets us the opposite of that. The correct answer here is going to be our min ifs. So that would be what we would use to find the smallest value of a given condition or set of conditions inside of Excel. And it's just a very easy formula to be able to operate against. So hopefully you find these six new formulas really helpful and effective in terms of being able to write more effective formulas going forward. There's always new stuff that's being added to Excel, new formulas. One of my favorite newest formulas that have been added is the X lookup, which we're going to give that its own day in the sun very, very soon. So stay tuned. And we'll talk a little bit about one of the better, newer ways of being able to look up data inside of Excel. You know, we've got VLOOKUP, we've got index and match. Well, now we have XLOOKUP, which is kind of like their, if they were to come together and form the most comprehensive way of finding data in Excel, it would be that XLOOKUP function. But we're going to cover that in a future episode of this Excel new features class. Okay, another new feature that has been added to Excel for 2019 forward is some new charts that have been added. Now, charts are one of the best things you can do inside of Excel because it really helps bring your data to life. And there are two new charts that you should be aware of. One is a funnel chart, and then the other is a map chart. Now, I am a self-admitted geo nut, so I'm going to talk a little bit more about the map charts here in a minute because there's some new functions that you should be aware of. But I do want to draw your attention to the funnel chart, or sometimes referred to as a reverse wedding cake chart. And what we can use this for is to kind of show progression, you know. So in this particular example, we have a listing of our data and we want to kind of show maybe the sales pipeline for an organization. And so, you know, we typically start off with a large number of potentials and then ultimately it will funnel down to closed deals. Well, what's beautiful about this is that it gives us context to those sales over time and to those client relationships over time. So we can see essentially, you know, out of 371 prospective people, we end up with 23 closed deals. Now, this kind of helps us understand where we are in each phase of this cycle. Now, super simple to be able to create it. All you're going to want to do is put your data inside of Excel like this, give it a nice label, and then I would tell you to order it in terms of progression. So in this case, we're starting with our prospects, going to our leads, assessment, so on and so forth, ultimately ending up with our closed deals. Now, one of the really nice things about Excel is the fact that we'll figure out how to create a specific chart for you. What you're going to want to do is select your data as we've got listed here. And from here, head on over to the insert menu. And from the insert menu, I want you to draw your attention smack dab right here in the middle. You'll see the charts work group. Now, from that charts work group, you can create any specific type of chart that you would like manually. But my favorite way is to click this recommended charts. And when we click this recommended chart, it will analyze the data and recommend charts that best fit that data schema the best. So we could see, for example, a clustered bar chart, column, pie chart, whatever we choose to do. And you'll notice here that funnel chart will also be listed. And with almost no fuss and muss, we can easily be able to create that chart. Quick pro tip, creating a chart title, you can either manually click it in and manually write your title in here. Here's a better way of handling it. Click your chart title, and then you can point it at a specific cell, like, for example, our April customer activity here, and then you can dynamically pull that value in place. It's not supported on every single chart type, but it is one of my preferred ways to point it at a particular value, like in cell A1, than to manually type it, so that if it updates and changes in the future, we can easily update and change that. Unfortunately, it's not supported on every single chart type. So some of the newer charts, unfortunately, aren't going to have it available to it. But depending on the one, like here, for example, this bar chart, I can go ahead and point it at this cell here. Oops, let's try that one more time. I can do equals and point it at cell A1. Okay, and it will pull that value in. So if we change this from April customer activity to May, we'll see that chart title dynamically update. So that is a little bit about the funnel chart. No different than any other chart that's listed. It's just a newer type that you have available to you. Now, big change are mapping charts. So maps have been in Excel for a long time. However, truthfully, for most folks, that functionality was out of reach because the amount of data required to really kind of do a meaningful map was quite difficult, and just frankly, it was difficult, you know? And now Microsoft has added specific simple map charts, which I think work really, really, really well. Now, I want to draw your attention. There's a couple of different charting types for maps inside of here. We're going to be looking specifically at the simple charts, but I do want to remind you that you do have power features like Power Map that are still supported inside of Excel. This is different. Now, to create a map inside of Excel, all you really have to have is some sort of value you want to evaluate and then some sort of geography that you can identify that with. In this particular instance, we've got a table of data. In this case, we've got state data. Notice that we also have some Canadian province data too, Alberta, British Columbia, and Ontario. Now, we can do the exact same thing. We'll come on over here to our recommended charts, and it will look at the various charts. And we could, for example, create a bar chart. We can create our column chart, even our funnel chart listed. But you'll also see here this filled map will also be a value that we can use as well. Okay, and that is a simple chart. Now, if we add another value in here, let's go ahead and add the great state of Nevada. Okay, and then we go ahead and we add, let's just go ahead and say 500. Okay, we need to go ahead and accept that they are going to share some data. We'll see that that Nevada chart ends up. Now, one extra thing with respect to the maps I want to draw your attention to. There is another menu that you should be that you're going to have available to you. So if you click the actual chart and then you click the actual map, over here on the right-hand side, you'll notice there are some additional options with respect to how that map is going to be generated. For example, we get our map projection, our map area, and our map label. Now, there are different types of projection, okay? And by default, it'll go to the automatic one. But if we have a preferred type, the Mercator projection, okay, or the Miller projection, we can adjust accordingly to it. Likewise, we can also say, hey, only include stuff with data in it. In this case, it'll drop out all the states and provinces that don't have data. Or we could just say, you know what, include everything and it will all pop up for us. So we do get some specifics, you know, in terms of how we're going to address this and how we are going to include it. and we do get a lot of specifics over what type of map it should be displayed. If you're looking for more than this, though, what I would recommend to check out the Power Map capabilities of Excel, and certainly Power BI. Power BI has a wealth of additional mapping options in addition to what you see here, and you can even bring in third-party tools like ArcGIS, which is one of the most powerful mapping GIS tools out there, which is certainly what you would want to use if you wanted to do advanced mapping. Now, in addition to country and state data, so we saw our country data, we saw our state data, this will go all the way down to county data, and it won't unfortunately go any further than that at the time of this recording. But as an example, we could put in Los Angeles County. Okay, notice I'm using the word Los Angeles County. Let's say Orange County. Okay, let's say Riverside County. These are all counties near me. Okay, and let's just go ahead and say Ventura County. These are all your areas roughly around Los Angeles. Okay, so let's go ahead and create a map from this. We'll just say 100, 500, 400, 300. Same thing, we're going to highlight this section. We'll come over here to our insert, recommended charts. Okay, and then notice it will create a map, but in this case, just with the state of California. If we click into that specific map, we can adjust it so that if we wanted to, only, for example, show those specific regions, we could go ahead and do this. And so notice over here, we get slightly different. We can go ahead and say just our regional data. Oops. Let's go ahead and select only the regions with data. Let's try that again. And sure enough, we get a nice map just showing the specifics for Southern California. And so I love maps. I'm a self-admitted map nerd. I think there is really kind of interesting, useful things that you can do with map that make it really difficult to understand without a map. Geospatial analytics is such an amazing field of analysis that, you know, putting your firm or your organization's data on a map and being able to see things like trends and patterns and where people are located versus where sales are occurring, you'll find that you're going to get a lot more analysis out of this than you would ever get just by looking at a simple map chart. Than just looking at a simple column chart or pie chart. You just get a lot more with it. All right, let's go ahead and have our next review question. What type of geography cannot be used for making a simple map inside of Excel? Is it country data? Nope, you can absolutely do country data. Is it state data? Nope, you can absolutely do state data as well. Is it county data? Yes. Okay, what you cannot create a simple map from would be our street address. So that's the only one that we can't use. And if we wanted to do that, we could still do that inside of Excel, but we would want to use a different type of mapping tool. Probably Power Map would be where we would want to start. And if we want to take that data outside of Excel, that is super simple to be able to do as well. All right, moving along here, let's go ahead and get back to it. And let's talk about some of the new features with respect to the integration of Power BI. Now, I just want to point this out because it is a hidden feature that most folks don't know about, which is the ability to be able to take data from Excel and push it directly into Power BI and use it as a data source inside of Power BI. And as long as that data is somewhere accessible to Power BI, like in a OneDrive or SharePoint or published on the web, guess what? You can continue to update this data as well. It's super simple. Okay, so in this particular example, we have a listing of pivot table data. And we've got some nice, for example, slicers and other items that are listed here as well. So if we wanted to be able to push this to Power BI, we could go ahead and do that. We would create the pivot table, the slicers, the way that we would want them to be, just lay them out the way that we would want them to look. And we come up here to our file menu. And from file menu, we're going to go ahead and choose the publish button. And from the publish button, you'll see there is an option right here smack dab that says publish to Power BI. And what's awesome about this is that it gives us the ability to be able to create the data in a tool that is familiar to us and then push it to a tool that might be new to us. Power BI for a lot of you would be something that maybe you don't have a lot of experience with yet. And I can tell you, it's an incredible, powerful tool. And if you're just getting started, check out our podcast series just on Power BI. And even for those of you who are Power users, you know, at some point you're going to have data that was originated inside of Excel. And it's just going to be a heck of a lot easier to keep that data in Excel because it might be coming from other people, other folks in your company might need to update it, but you want to report upon it in Power BI. Well, guess what? You can get the best of both worlds. You author the data inside of Excel, and when you're ready to go, you go ahead and select publish to Power BI, and you can either export it or you can upload it. Okay, we're going to go ahead and save this real quick, and we're going to go ahead and then just upload it. And you'll notice here, hey, it was uploaded successfully. Okay, we'll go ahead and click this go to Power BI. It's going to go ahead and open up a browser window for us. And then we can interact with that data just if it were native to Power BI itself. Now, sometimes it takes a second here. And unfortunately, we don't have time to be able to wait for this to come. Let's just see if it pops up. Okay, but it usually takes a few minutes for that data to be able to be processed. And when it is finally available, we will see that data pop up here as that workbook as being published. So maybe if we get a second here, we'll check in and see if that data has been successfully published to Power BI. But that publishing feature between Excel and Power BI works just so wonderfully nice. All you have to do is create your data exactly the way you want. And then from there, just publish it, and then it'll be available to you. Okay, now the next thing I wanted to show you are some options with respect to defaults for pivot tables. This is one of my favorite new functions for Excel. So I live and die on pivot tables. I create pivot tables all day for different types of analysis I'm doing, whether it be financial analysis, operational efficiency analysis. Anytime I need to crunch numbers and I need to do it across dimensional data, and I don't want to create a full-blown dashboard, for example, using Power BI, I'll use pivot tables because they're such a useful tool to be able to use. Well, I often am making several changes to my pivot tables to get them the way I want, you know, and by default, for example, a pivot table will put it into the compact layout. It does certain totaling operations, subtotals, so on and so forth. And I always find myself having to adjust or change the pivot table layout to get it to be the way I want. Well, guess what? In Excel 2019 forward, if you come on over here to the file menu, drop down here to options, and from the options menu, select the data tab, you will be presented with the ability to create default options for your Excel pivot tables. You'll see right up here, right at the top under data options, make changes to default layouts for pivot tables. And you'll see edit default layout. If we click this, it's going to give us the ability to be able to change that default layout for our pivot tables. So we can point it at maybe a specific range that we're always using. Okay, if we want to do it that way. We can also adjust the default visual appearances and calculations for our pivot table as well. For example, we can always include subtotals, and if they're there, put them at the top. Or if you know what, we would prefer them at the bottom, go ahead and show the subtotals at the bottom of the group. We can do that as well. Likewise, for our grand totals, we can have them on, we can have them off. We're in complete control. We can change the report layout, okay, whether it should be an online or tabular or compact layout form. And likewise for our blank rows as well. Now, one option I want to draw your attention to, if you come in here to pivot table options, this is the default menu options for creating your pivot tables. And what we could do here is that we can also adjust those default options that would be present with respect to creating our pivot table. Now, one such option that I really recommend that you utilize is the auto fit column widths on update and preserve cell formatting on update. Now, what those two options do, okay, the first one will dynamically adjust the width of the column depending on the width of the data. So if it's a small column and with a small amount of data, it makes the column small. Likewise, it'll make it big. The other option here is preserve cell forming on update. So if you, for example, have gone through and you've highlighted certain rows, highlighted certain columns, and when you update your data, you notice all those changes get blown away. Well, selecting the preserve cell formatting on update will ensure that as you update your pivot table, that formatting that you've done essentially remains there. Any aspect about the pivot table can be defaulted now. So from the auto fitting and the preserving cell format to how errors and values should be displayed, whether or not cells should be merged in center. If we come on over here to these other options, we'll see configuration defaults for tools and filters, display, printing, and more. Essentially, all aspects of that pivot table can now be defaulted and can be exactly the way you'd like them every single time you use your pivot tables. So I really like that because, again, I use pivot tables all the time, and having those default options make it really simple to be able to operate with and be able to use. And I'm just not having to reset them every single time I create my table. So to get to that again, go to the file menu up here at the top, right over here, then go ahead and select Excel options, the data tab, and then you'll see this edit default layout right here. Let's do a quick check-in. Let's see if our data for Power BI has been published yet. Okay, let's see if that has popped up. Let's see if it's come in. Usually it comes in, usually it takes a minute or so. Let's see the data sets. Well, maybe they're having an issue today, but normally we would see that popped up right here. So something to check out in the future. We'll check in maybe if we get a second here one more time in a moment. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about today is the data types for Excel. Okay. Now, data types are a really cool dynamic function for Excel. It is only available to Office 365 subscribers. So if you have a perpetual license, unfortunately, it will not be a feature available to you. And what data types allow us to do is to be able to designate specific columns as either geography columns or financial data columns. And Excel will then use the internet to dynamically retrieve information about those specific columns. Let's go ahead and take a look at our first one here. And I am, for this example, going to create a column that will hold a stock ticker symbol. So we're going to go ahead and say ticker. Okay. And then we're going to go ahead and put in a couple of examples of organizations and the different stock symbols that they would choose to use. Okay. So let's go ahead and put in Apple, AAPL. I think Google's is ABC, if I remember correctly. Let's go ahead and put in Amazon, AMZN. Let's put in Microsoft, MSFT. Let's go ahead and put in Southwest. That would be Love. And how about we go ahead and put in Disney as well. Now, this next step is optional, but it will make your life a little bit easier if you turn your data into a table for a lot of different reasons, the biggest which is it will be dynamic and can grow as you add additional values. And I also want to draw your attention to, it figures out, for example, you're talking about stock data. If you see down here, as I started to enter in these symbols, that it says convert to stocks. So it starts to figure out you're working with financial data pretty quickly. But let's just go ahead and turn this into a table. Yes, we have headers. Okay. And we're going to go ahead and come on over here to our data tab, and then we're going to go ahead and select stocks. Now watch what happens when I select this. These automatically expand, okay, to include the name of the company. And you always know that you're working with stock data because it's got this little, what looks to be a courthouse. I'm assuming that's supposed to be a stock exchange icon listed right here. Now, one of the biggest reasons that we want to use this as a table, if we go ahead and we add additional values, so let's go ahead and add Berkshire Class A like this, we will see that the additional values will also get added in as well. So that's one of the big reasons why we want to use tables more than anything else. Okay. So one of the cool things that we can do with this is that we can add dynamic data to our data set. Notice this little icon up here next to our ticker. It's a little, looks to be like a card with several rows and a plus sign. Well, if we click that little guy, we can now pull dynamic data into our data set. So for example, let's say we wanted to do some financial analysis. I want to understand like the 52-week high for these particular companies, or maybe the 52-week low for these particular companies. We can pull in this data dynamically into our data set, and we can, you know, essentially create a financial model around this. We can pull in, for example, the, let's go ahead and do our price. Let's Let's pull that in here. And I'm going to point out that the price is relatively real time. It's probably delayed at a minimum 20 minutes and probably as much as 45 minutes or so. It's usually less than an hour. But, you know, if you're trying to provide absolute real-time analysis, this is not a Bloomberg terminal, so please be aware of that. You'll notice right up top here says financial market information is as is, not for trading purposes. Okay. Now, other things we could pull in, for example, we could pull in where their headquarters are. So if you want to write a letter, you could pull that in. We could, for example, pull in what industries, so on and so forth with it. Now, if we had, for example, a nice portfolio and we wanted to have and know what our fair market value is of something, we could do that pretty easily. We could put a column in here. Let's just say it's shares owned like this. And I'm just going to put in a couple of examples. Okay, this is not financial data. This is standard decimal data. And let's say, well, I wish I owned more Berkshire. That would be amazing. Okay. And let's just say something like this. Well, one of the cool things is now we can create a fair market value column, and using table logic, shares owned times share price, automatically calculate that out for us. And we would have a nice fair market value calculation. Now, if we come on over here to our table design, go ahead and select our total row, we could, for example, see a nice value of our portfolio at any given point. And we can even put our total rows down here to include things like averages, mins, max, so on and so forth. This Berkshire A really, though, does distort things in the sense of how expensive those shares are. Now, that's a little bit on the stock type. There's also geography, and geography is pretty cool too. You can do this at the country, state, city level as well. Let's just do our country level. So we're going to say the USA, we'll say Canada, let's say Mexico. One of my personal favorite countries, New Zealand, Australia, China. Yeah, that's good enough. Same thing. Let's go ahead and turn this into a table here. Okay, and then we're going to go ahead and do the same thing here. We're going to go ahead and notice it says, say, convert to geography as well. So we'll come on over here to our data tab. We're going to go ahead and select geography. Actually, we should select all of them and select geography. There we go. And likewise, we can pull in information about these specific geos. Now, I want to point out it will pull in this data from a number of different sources, from like census data to Wikipedia, CIA Factbook, and others. And both for geography as well as the financial type, if you actually click on the little logo, you can click the card and it'll give you an overview of all data that it has available to it. If we click back over here to our financial data and again, click on one of these things, we can see everything currently available and we can add any of those to our data set. Now for our geography, imagine we're trying to maybe determine where we want to put our next office or where we want to expand our company. Well, we get a lot of stuff, everything from demographic data to person data to geography data, economic data, so on and so forth. You know, so maybe we want to pick things around a CPI of a certain percentage. That's the consumer price index. We can go ahead and we can select that as well. Or let's say we want to pick stuff where there's a certain demographic of, you know, certain populations above or below a certain age or above or below a certain ethnic concentration. You know, maybe, for example, we want to find where certain peoples are living and certain demographic concentration levels that would be important. So we can, for example, pull all these different things that are available to us. Let's see if we can find this. And what I want you to know is that for each of these areas, there's going to be different data at a country level versus a state or territory level versus a city level. So here, for example, the country is definitely going to be the most, you know, things like electric power consumption or armed forces size is going to apply to these countries. But if we were to do, let's say, city data, okay, Big Bear Lake where I live, Lake Arrowhead, which is another town not too far from there, okay. And let's just go ahead and pull Claremont as well. And let's just say Upland. Okay. Actually, I think we can just do Upland. Let's try that. Okay. And if we were to do city data, Okay. We're going to see different things. You notice it's a lot lower. You know, we get, for example, the latitude and longitude. We can get, for example, if they have an elected person. But depending on where they are, that we may or may not get that data. And it's also going to be a different set of data compared to a country, state, or city. Now, when it doesn't know what to return back to you, like it doesn't apply, like, for example, Lake Arrowhead is an unincorporated area, I believe. I'm pretty sure it's unincorporated. Big Bear City is unincorporated. I know that. Big Bear Lake, on the other hand, has a mayor. Well, we would see that data, but if it doesn't have that data available, you get the air pound field exclamation mark saying, hey, there's not a problem here. I just don't have that in my data set, so it's not something that I can display to you. It's not something that we currently have available. Alrighty, that does bring us to the end of our presentation for today. I hope you've enjoyed these amazing new features and functions with respect to Excel. Let's go ahead and have our final review question and round out for the day. Which fields can be included in the stock data type? Lots of fields can be included. Okay, can we do the 52-week high and low? Absolutely. Can we do the current price? Absolutely. Can we get the trading volume? Absolutely. So the correct answer here is all of the above. All of these are available to us, and all of these are different fields that we could choose to include in our stock data type. And it's going to vary. You know, you can pull in stuff outside of the U.S. market as well. I want to point out it's not just New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, but other exchanges as well. So it will vary depending on what you're looking at, and what context and what security, but almost all of the major things that you would expect for financial analysis would be listed. Okay, as a recap, what did we learn today? Well, we looked at some of the newest functions available, including the text join, the concatenate, the ifs, the max ifs, the min ifs. We learned how these functions work and why they are better than their traditional counterpart. We talked about analyzing data using the stocks and geography data types inside of Excel. And we also looked at two of the newer functions for visualizing our data with maps and funnel charts. We are planning on exploring the new features and functions of Excel in several different episodes. Impossible to cover everything that gets added in one episode. So please stay tuned to this playlist and be aware that there are additional episodes coming out soon. We're going to cover in future episodes things like the forecasting functions, which are really cool for projecting cash flow or sales or expenses in the future based off of historical data and using statistics. We'll also talk about collaboration and communication best practices with staff, colleagues, and clients using Excel as well. Lots of other features and functions coming. Stay tuned. Now, I do want to remind you that if you are a financial professional, and I hope you are, you can earn a CPE credit for watching or listening to today's podcast. It's super simple. All you have to do is head on over to cpetoday.com, and today's course code is EXB1. Take a short 5-question exam, and you will earn a credit for today's class. It's super simple, fast, and effective. Additionally, for today's class, you also get the learning materials. So there's a book that goes along with what I talked about today, outlining every single step of what I did, as well as sample materials that clearly allow you to demonstrate and reinforce the skills discussed. So I think it's a great value, great way of staying on top of your education. Hopefully you do too. So again, check out cpetoday.com and use course code EXB1. If you like today's presentation, we'd love to hear from you. Please consider connecting with us on social media. You can find us on almost every social media channel at CPE Today. You can watch our videos on YouTube as well as on Facebook. You can leave a message. You can ask questions. We'd love to hear from you. And if you think we earned it, please consider subscribing so that you can get our updates on our future courses and future podcasts. We're always putting out new material, and we try to put out a new podcast twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays, and you can even watch live on YouTube and Facebook at 11 o'clock Pacific on Tuesdays and Fridays. Now, if you can't catch us live, remember you can always catch us on demand on the streaming platform of your choice. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and others. We would love it if you consider subscribing and maybe even leaving us a review. It's been an absolute pleasure being with you here today. Thank you so much for your time and attention, and I look forward to seeing you in the office and our next podcast. Best wishes and good luck.